This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3401 for Monday, the 16th of August 2021. Tid's show is entitled, Mana Hacks and is part of the series Tabletop Gaming. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 32 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Klaatu muses about mana ramping in Magic the Gathering.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to Hacker Public Radio. I am on a walk and I figured I'd continue a talk that I had started on a different walk. About Magic the Gathering. Well, I shouldn't say finished, because they're really independent of one another, these two episodes, but in the previous one that made me think to do this one, I was talking about different card roles, like the different roles that a card can play in Magic the Gathering, and how to satisfy those roles with specific cards, or specific kinds of cards. And at the end of that one, I thought of talking about the resource, the main resource in Magic the Gathering, which is mana. And mana in the game is essentially a currency system to prevent players from playing all of the cards they want to play. Without the mana system, you could conceive of, a combination of cards that would enable a player to just play their entire deck, essentially, and probably just never stop playing. It would be an endless turn, or whatever the scenario might be. Too many cards for one turn, anyway. So a currency system ensures that even though they have seven cards in their hand, a player can't really play any more than whatever they can afford. And the way that the currency is generated is that the player puts a land card on the table in front of them, provided that they have drawn a land card from their draw deck or their library in Magic the Gathering terminology. You can play one land per turn. This action is colloquially called a land drop, and ideally you would be making one land drop per turn, no fewer than that, because if you do fewer than that, then you're going to fall behind the ideal state. The ideal state, barring any exception, would be that you have as much available mana as the number of turns there has been in the game so far. So for instance, if on the second turn, you'd have 2 mana. On the third turn, you'd have 3 mana. The fourth turn, you'd have 4 mana. Seventh turn, you'd have 7 mana. Because every turn, you're putting down a land card, and every turn, you're able to tap the land card. Tap meaning turn the card over sideways. Tap the land card to produce 1 mana of that color, of whatever color the land is. And that mana becomes sort of a floating currency that you have during that turn, and you can spend that mana on playing the cards that ostensibly are going to actually win you the game, and that really make the game happen. So you might be summoning creatures that cost a certain number of mana, or you might be casting a spell that costs some number of mana, and so on. What some people realized after a while, after 30 years of Magic the Gathering existing and over 25,000 cards being produced, unique cards, card types being produced, people started to realize that there are advantages to, I shouldn't say they only realized it after 30 years. I mean, people have been realizing this throughout the game, But over the course of the lifespan of the game, there have been developed some hacks around the rigid scheduling of land / mana availability. I'm going to put them into three categories. These aren't mutually exclusive categories. There is some overlap, and it's probably not all the categories, I wouldn't imagine. I'm speaking mostly on, you know, based on my own experience, the cards that I happen to have purchased from under the table at a local game store, like the discards that nobody else wanted. So I'm going off of a really motley collection of Magic the Gathering cards. I mean, I've looked some up too online. I've seen some on, you know, in Magic games being played. So I am speaking a little bit outside my immediate availability, but you know, largely this is just kind of my take on it. And I'm assuming there's a bunch of other takes on this, and I'm by no means an expert or an authority. But I figured, why not talk about it? It's a fun topic for me, maybe for some of you. So the three hacks that I can identify around mana availability, and these are broadly in the philosophy of mana ramp. That's what they call it in the, again, another term from Magic the Gathering people who talk about this stuff. When they talk about this, they talk about mana ramp. And the idea behind these hacks is to make more mana available to you above and beyond what sort of naturally you should have. By the rules of the game, the expectation is to have as much mana as you have, as the number of turns that have passed, just because that's the natural flow of it, right? Play a land, get a mana, play a land, get a mana, play a land, get a mana. But you can only play a land once per turn, so you're only accruing one mana source per turn. These hacks get around that in some way, and so they call that a mana ramp, because you're kind of ramping up the amount of mana you have. So by turn, let's say you need 3 mana to play some card that you have in your hand that you're just itching to play. It's only a second turn, you've only got 2 lands. Well, what if there was a card that you could play that would make it so that you could then have three mana available on turn 2? What would that look like? Well, like I say, 3 categories. 1, not mutually exclusive. 1, adding mana outside of a land drop. So normally when you play a land, that's a new source of mana. You can tap that land and whatever other land you have untapped on the table currently, and everything untaps at the beginning of your turn. So typically you have, you know, the land that you've accrued up to this point plus the one that you've just dropped, that number of land you can tap, and now you have that much mana. So there's a hack where you could maybe acquire mana outside of that system, outside of the land drop system. Second category, adding mana, more mana for less cost. I'll explain that in a little bit. And then the third is adding mana over time. So normally mana only lasts till the end of your turn. Like, whatever you've used up, you've used up. And on your next turn, you untap everything and you start fresh with 0 mana, essentially. It's not common for you to acquire more mana than you sort of can afford, because you're usually pretty in control of how much mana you're getting. So it would be a little bit rare for you to acquire a bunch of mana that you just couldn't spend that turn. You just wouldn't tap the resources that would give you that mana. But I mean, it probably happens. There's probably ways for it to happen. Okay, so I'm gonna, those are the three categories. And now I will discuss a couple examples of those. So I guess one of them would be the first one, adding mana outside of your land drop procedure. What would that look like? Well, there is a card, and it's not just a specific card, because I don't want to get that into detail, but I mean, I'm going to name the card, but there are other cards that do similar things. So these are just kind of like, I'm giving broad overviews. And once again, the cards that I'm mentioning are really just out of my my own, you know, sort of collection of cards. And those cost like, you know, 50 cents each, so at the most. So, I mean, on the resale market, if I were to sell them, they would cost about 50 cents each. I got it for even less, so wasn't... These are not prime examples of these categories, but they are affordable examples. So for me, that's a feature. I like that. So anyway, this one card that I happened across is called Avacyn's Pilgrim. And it costs one mana, one green mana, to play this, to cast this card. And it is a creature. It's a Avacyn's Pilgrim creature. It's a person who worships Avacyn, a god in the world of the Magic: The Gathering setting, or one of them. And normally, a creature wouldn't have anything to do with mana. That's not really the creature's purview. That's the land. That's what land is for. It provides mana. But for whatever reason, this particularly holy, devout person, if you tap this creature that you put on the board for just one mana, you could tap this creature every turn of your, any time on your turn, every turn that you have, as long as that creature's alive on your board, in your battlefield, and it adds one white mana to your mana pool. So the exchange rate is not bad. I mean, it's one for one. It kind of seems kind of weird. You're paying one mana, and the benefit that you get is one mana. But if you think about it, you know, procedurally, then you realize, well, that's one mana that I've been able to acquire without a land drop. I've been able to spend one mana on my turn to get a mana production facility on my battlefield. And so you could be, you know, turn two, you might now have, after if you've played Avacyn's Pilgrim for just one green mana, you've now got 1, 2, 3 mana sources when you really ought to only have two. So you've ramped your mana production. Now, that particular card, of course, is a little bit specialized. It assumes that you are playing a deck of cards built from at least green and white cards, or like cards that cost green and white mana. So if you're not, that would probably be less than ideal. But there are cards like this, is my point. It doesn't have to be this specific one. There are other cards similar to this that will give you some sort of unexpected, something outside of a land. Because once again, you can only play one land per turn. So anything that gets you, that enables you to get around that restriction, means that you can potentially be, you know, have more mana available to you aside from the restriction that you can only play one mana producing land per turn. Well, one land, which happens to produce mana. You can play one of those per turn, according to the rules. So a creature being able to play that could be beneficial. Okay, so I think that's the ad. There's another one. This one, and there are a bunch of these available as well. There's a card a cycle of cards, actually, the signet cards, from some guilds of Ravnica. There's specifically the one that I happen to have is Azorius Signet, and it costs 2 mana, colorless mana. So whatever kind of mana you have, you can spend 2. Put this artifact on your battlefield, and anytime you pay 1 mana and tap this artifact, you are allowed to add a white and a blue mana. Now, the way I'm reading that, that says to me, you pay 1. This is the wrong category then. Okay, well, great. So the Azorius Signet is a great example of the next category, which was add mana for less. So in this case, you're paying 2 mana to put the thing out on the board. You pay 1 to tap it, and you get both white and blue mana. So again, it's kind of specific to the deck. You would want to be playing a deck that would benefit from white and blue mana. So you'd probably be playing a white and blue deck. But you're tapping the card, you're paying 1 mana every time you do it, and you're getting 2 manas into your deck. Now, there was that initial investment of 2 mana, granted. So, you know, you have to use this a couple of times for it to sort of pay for itself, as it were. But, I mean, after 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, after 2 uses, it's paid for itself, and you're now producing more mana than you have any right to be producing at that point in the game. So again, that's kind of a combination, really, I guess, of the first and the second, because that is outside of the land drop, and it is also getting more mana for less than it actually costs. Okay, I guess, again, to zip back right up to that first category, adding mana out of a land drop, this may sort of suit, I guess, like I say, these categories are not mutually exclusive, so a lot of these examples are kind of crossing over into other, nobody's staying in their lane. There's a card called Evolving Wilds, which I picked up, like, I don't know, 10 of, because I just saw that there were a lot of them, so I was like, I'll just take these. These seem like good sort of flexible lands to have. And indeed they are, in a weird way. The Evolving Wilds give you, I think they provide colorless mana if you tap them, I think. Either way, when you sacrifice them, when you discard on purpose an Evolving Wild, you can then go get a land from your deck, I think, yeah, and put it into your hand. Or maybe it's right onto the battlefield, I don't remember which one. It seems like a one-for-one trade, and it seems like an odd way to sort of delay the satisfaction of getting a land. But functionally, what it does is it sort of acts as a very flexible proxy for some land that you'll need. So in other words, if you're playing 2 or 3 color deck, rather than putting only some number of red and some number of blue land into your deck, you can put some Evolving Wilds in there, and then when you hit an Evolving Wild, when you sacrifice it, you can go back into your deck and just hunt down the color that you need right now for your hand. So there's flexibility there. And it also has the somewhat unusual property of thinning out your deck, which, once again, you might think that seems like a negative, but it can be a positive, because a deck with less variety is more predictable. So if you want to make it so that your deck meets the minimum deck number requirement, or I guess the deck number requirement, which in a normal game is 60 cards, in some formats it's like 100. Well, 100 different cards, 60 different cards, that's a lot of variety. And it kind of means that when you're drawing, you have very little sort of, well, you have no way of predicting what you're going to draw, Whereas if you know that you have a bunch of four Evolving Wilds in your deck, which would be the most that you could have, that's four cards that you basically don't have to worry about. They're four cards that point back to a land, and not just any land, but if you're playing more than one color in your deck, it's pointing back to whatever land you happen to need at that moment. Or, I mean, as long as that's in your deck. So anyway, it's a flexible card. It is a land, so it is within your land. You have to drop it at some point, but you can make it work for you at a later time, more specifically to what you actually, what your deck is, you know, you can respond to how your deck is acting by using an Evolving Wild. It's not a killer card or anything, but it's something I thought I should mention. Okay. Speaking of adding mana for less and adding it out of the land, out of the land drop process, there is a card called Soul Ring, which is nice because it's an artifact, so it's not going to be during your land drop. It only costs one mana in the first place, and when you tap it, you get two colorless mana in return. So that is like right out of the playbook of that second category, adding more mana for less cost. That Soul Ring, I think, definitely qualifies for that. And then there's another one, I guess, just this is, I guess, solidly in the add mana out of the land drop. This is not a great card, but I happen to have it, and it's one that I've kind of relied on. It's quite expensive. It's five, expensive in mana. It's dirt cheap in terms of money. Nobody wants this. It's a meteorite card. When it enters the battlefield, it does like 2 damage to your opponent. But I guess more importantly, you can tap it for any color of mana that you want. So it's an all-purpose mana production facility. It only gives you one, but it's of any color. So once again, if you're playing a multicolor deck, you can tap the meteorite and produce whatever you need in that moment. The downside is, I guess, that it's 5 mana to play it in the first place. So you have to use this thing 5 times in order for it to pay for itself. But in the decks that I've been playing, mana availability has not been a problem. I tend to put a lot of land in my decks, and so probably to my detriment ultimately, but I do just like to have it there. I like to have the mana available when I need it, and so that's what I do. And so paying 5, especially if I have some other card that's giving me additional mana, 5 is relatively, I mean, that's affordable in a lot of cases. So that's a thing that gives you mana outside of a land drop. All right, that's all of that stuff. And then there's the adding mana over time, which is an interesting mechanic. I have 2 instances of it myself. I think there are probably, well, I know there are others. There are probably almost certainly far better versions of these, but the ones that I know of and the ones that I can speak to because I have them and have played with them is the Mage Ring Network, which has this interesting mechanic where it is a land, so it is not outside of a land drop. You're going to have to play it as a land at some point. So it eats up, you know, it stays within the rules in that sense. When you tap it, it gives you 1 colorless mana, which is fine. Colorless mana is a useful thing. I try to keep a fair amount of colorless mana in my deck, because it's generic and easy to get. I mean, not easy to get, but it's generic and flexible a little bit, because a lot of cards need like at least 1 generic. But if you pay 1 mana and tap the Mage Ring Network, you add a little token to it. I just use glass beads. You can use dice. You can use whatever. You add a token to it, and those tokens are mana storage tokens. And in the future, you can remove some number of tokens from this card and that will add some that much mana to your pool. So over the course of several turns, you pay one mana to load up this Mage Ring network, and then later in the game, when you need 9 mana to pay for some fancy card, or 10 mana to pay for some fancy card or whatever, then you can, probably not 10. Anyway, when you need the mana, you've got it stored up on this Mage Ring network. You can tap it, remove those tokens, deplete it, and use all that mana at once. There's a similar mechanic for Pirate's Prize, which costs 3 generic mana and a blue. And when you play it, there's a mechanic where you can create treasure tokens. And anytime you sacrifice a treasure token, you get 1 mana of any color. Now, it is a blue card, so there's a likelihood that you're going to be making blue mana out of it. But I mean, if you're playing a multicolored deck, then you could do that. Or if you're playing something that needs more generic mana than you have on the board, sacrifice some treasure and turn it into mana, generic mana, and then you can play whatever you wanted to play. There are lots and lots of other cards that famously and even infamously add mana outside of the normal process. And people tend to like those because, like I say, mana is kind of the fuel that keeps your turn active. As long as you got mana to spend and you've built your deck to fulfill those roles that I was talking about, such as ensuring that you have cards that are going to let you draw more cards that are going to let you rummage through your graveyard or your deck. And, well, I guess through your deck would be drawing more cards, but rummaging through your graveyard to get back something that you had to discard at some point. As long as you've got the cards to sort of chain together and give yourself flexibility, then getting a bunch of mana and being able to spend it and then get another card, spend it, and then that'll get you another card from your graveyard. So you take that and you spend it because you got all the mana you need. Then you're chaining together way more cards than normally you'd be able to, given how far into the game you are. So it can be a very, very powerful and flexible trick. I guess I'll just really quickly go over the 3 categories again, just so that we've restated them at the end. I'll put them in the show notes as well. Add mana outside of the land drop. Add mana for less, add mana over time. Those are the 3 mana hacks that I know of. Those are the cards that I could find that kind of demonstrate those principles. I happen to know that there are a lot of other cards out there. For instance, the Avacyn's Pilgrim, that's a green card that produces white mana, so it's very specific to someone's strategy, but maybe not to yours, and maybe not to the cards that you happen to have. But if you look online for, you know, the best mana ramp cards or the most affordable mana ramp cards, you'll get taken to lists that are often just put out by people, so they're not always perfect, but there will be, you know, at least 10 cards that in some way manipulate mana supply. And I'm saying 10 cards per color. So you're looking at, you know, 50 cards to sort of sort through, and then probably another 20 for colorless mana. So you're probably looking at like 70 cards that you'll have to kind of sort through. And when I say sort through, you'll kind of want to look through them and see what they do. See if they match sort of what your capabilities are. Type them into your local card supplier, whatever that might be, and then see how much they are. That excludes a bunch of them for me. Like I say, I don't really spend any more than $2 on any single card. So, I try to keep it around 30 to 70 cents. limits me from probably entering any pro tournament with all those pro tournaments that New Zealand is famous for holding. I'm kidding, of course. I don't want to play in pro tournaments and tournaments, and I don't think they exist in New Zealand. So, but yeah, I keep it cheap, and I'm quite happy to do so. So, whatever end of the spectrum that you're on in terms of financial willingness to invest in a card game, you can just kind of let that be your guide. There's lots and lots of choices out there. And as long as you kind of know the role that you want to fill, you can search, you can look around and kind of figure out which cards are capable of serving that purpose for you. And sometimes you do have to be a little bit flexible. It took me like a good 2 years, I think, to really start to feel comfortable with colorless mana. It just didn't calculate for me for a long time. I just didn't understand why I would want colorless mana, because that seemed so sort of specific to me. But looking at it again, I realized that colorless mana is just as valuable as the colored mana, because a lot of cards actually do require colorless mana. And anyway, I've started playing more artifacts, and most of those, I think, at least in my experience, have been colorless. So it's a useful thing. So yeah, that's what I've been doing, working on with Magic. Thanks for going on this walk with me. I'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.